So my intention for this overview of Ratnasambhava is to evoke him as a figure in our imagination, first of all, and then to say something about the particular wisdom he's associated with. But like all the five Buddhas, he's also associated with a poison, which means a mental state which us unenlightened beings are prone to experience and suffer as a result of. So the poison that Ratnasambhava is associated with is conceit. And I'll outline what that means from a Buddhist perspective. And I'll then try to link this to another teaching, another Buddhist teaching called the Eight Worldly Winds, which I think can be one of the things that can trigger us off into an experience of conceit. And then towards the end, I'll just make a few suggestions to how we might try some practices out during these weeks of Ratnasambhava, relevant to what he symbolises. So I wanted to start by evoking Ratnasambhava, who is the Buddha of the southern realm, southern direction, and of course we have a very nice image of Ratnasambhava here on the shrine, which really helps. And we use our imagination to help us to connect with a Buddha figure such as Ratnasambhava. And as with most of the archetypal Buddha figures, we can create a context for visualising him by imagining a vast, limitless, radiant blue sky all around us. And in this vibrant space, we can sense our own potential for liberation from everything that constricts us and isolates us. Isolates us from life and from others. And in this blue sky, maybe we can also sense our potential for insight and limitless growth. And the tradition of visualizing Ratnasambhava is that within this blue sky appears a yellow lotus flower, and it's made of light, of pale yellow light. And resting on this lotus flower appears a moon mat, which is made of soft white light. And on this lotus throne appears the figure of Ratnasambhava himself. So Ratnasambhava's body is made of yellow light and radiates this golden light out onto us and also onto all beings. And like sunshine falling on plants, as we become receptive to Ratnasambhava, we can unfold our own potential for growth and self-actualization. So Ratnasambhava's lotus throne is supported by magnificent horses. And he sits poised and perfectly balanced. His legs are crossed in the lotus posture, and his right hand touches the earth in front of him, but with the palm facing outwards. So that's the difference between him and Akshobhya, where it's more the palm inwards. So, and this gesture is known as the gesture or the mudra of supreme generosity. And right in the thumb of his left hand, he rests sort of at about navel height, facing upwards, and in that he's holding a precious jewel. This connects with his name. Ratnasambhava means the jewel-born one. And Ratnasambhava is associated with the midday sun, and his image really evokes that quality of warmth. And he is traditionally associated with growth and abundance. And the jewel he holds in his hand is known as the wish-fulfilling jewel. And because of that, he's also associated very much with riches, very much spiritual riches. As I mentioned at the start of the meditation, he's also associated with the earth element. Historically, Ratnasambhava has had fewer devotees than some of the other Buddhas in the mandala. But in recent times, more and more Buddhists have started meditating on Ratnasambhava. And he's become known for a few particular qualities. He's been known as the Buddha of generosity because of this mudra. And he's also been described as the Buddha of beauty, or even of the Buddha of culture. And his mantra, which we can chant a bit later, is Om Ratnasambhava Tao. So each of the five Buddhas has very distinctive iconographies, and in terms of their colour, their gestures, the ritual implements they hold, and the mantras. But as well as this, each Buddha is also associated with a particular kind of wisdom. And Ratnasambhava's wisdom is known as the wisdom of sameness. And this seems to mean that when we attain wisdom, we see how all phenomena are essentially non-different. So we see how all conditioned phenomena are ultimately impermanent, insubstantial and unsatisfactory, the lakshanas. But the wisdom of sameness also involves recognizing that we are ultimately non-different from other beings, and connected to that, embodying an attitude of loving kindness and compassion equally towards all beings. And the wisdom of sameness seems to also include an understanding that all beings, including us, are capable of spiritual development. And yeah, if we apply ourselves and put ourselves in favourable, supportive conditions, then there's no end to that, right up to the point of awakening. Our default outlook as human beings is very different to this, as we're not enlightened. Buddhism often accounts for this unenlightened condition that we find ourselves in terms of habitual tendencies towards craving, hatred, and ignorance. Another mental state that can cause the suffering, according to Buddhism, is conceit. In the modern world, we often define conceit as the belief that we're superior to others in some way. And Buddhism has a different understanding of conceit. So according to the Buddha, thinking in terms of our status in relation to others in any way, whether we conclude that we are superior or inferior or equal, these are all forms of conceit. So for example, there was an early sutta where the Buddha is described as saying the equality conceit, the inferiority conceit, and the superiority conceit. This threefold conceit should be overcome. For after overcoming this threefold conceit, the monk, through the penetration of conceit, is said to have put an end to suffering. So the implication in this is that a certain kind of egalitarianism, where we insist everyone is equal, and self-conscious humility, insisting that others are superior to us, are both inverted forms of conceit as we usually understand it. If we insist that everyone is equal in a sort of hostile kind of way, we may be closing down opportunities to learn from others, which could help us to progress. And if we adopt a fixed position of inferiority, we deny our own potential, so negating the possibility of spiritual development. I noticed that the different references to the conceit, I could see where the Buddha talks about this. He seems to be speaking to monks, so it seems that this might be something that spiritual practitioners could have a sort of a vulnerability to, and it's one of the fetters that are supposed to be broken very late on towards enlightenment traditionally. So this may be raised as a question of how does conceit get activated in our own lives? And maybe primarily I wanted to suggest that this could be something that we could maybe be mindful of in our day-to-day lives during this time, this Ratnasambhava period, in our Sangha evenings. But I wanted to mention one Buddhist teaching that might be relevant here, and it's the teaching of the worldly winds, or the Loka Dharmas. So in the Loka Vipatti Sutta, the Buddha outlines eight worldly winds. And these are pleasure and pain, gain and loss, status and disgrace, and censure and praise. So the Buddha says that an ordinary run-of-the-mill person welcomes pleasure, gain, status and praise, and rebels against pain, loss, disgrace and censure. By contrast, a well-instructed disciple of the Noble Ones, when they experience these events, is able to reflect that they are inconstant and stressful and subject to change. So, for example, a well-instructed disciple might be able to mindfully observe either praise or censure and reflect that they're both inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. So I suppose perhaps reading this list made me kind of think that for myself, these are the kind of things that can easily trigger that sense of conceit and its different forms. And Yeah, there's a lot of fuel there for conceit. So perhaps experiences of loss or sensia could activate a sense of being inferior. Experiences of pleasure or status maybe could activate a sense of being superior. At least, potentially. Again, in the Loka Vipatti Sutta, the Buddha describes these eight worldly winds of gain, loss, status, disgrace, sensia, praise, pleasure, and pain. And he says, these are the eight worldly winds that spin after the world, and the world spins after these eight worldly winds. So I find that image quite evocative, that we're preoccupied with the worldly winds, and it's as if we might feel as if we're spinning. And it's almost like we're trying to define ourselves by temporary events. So it's very understandable, because we're sort of social animals and we want to get on and be liked and well thought of. It's all kind of totally understandable. But from a spiritual point of view, if we identify or define ourselves purely from that basis, it's sort of quite ungrounded. They're not really a secure refuge for us, ultimately. So I wanted to come back to the figure of Ratnasambhava. And, so he's associated with the earth element. And I've been sort of trying to visualise him, sort of just thinking about this evening and preparing for this evening, and just found him quite a grounded kind of figure. The sense of Ratnasambhava sitting serenely on his lotus throne. So after the frantic stress of being caught up with the worldly winds and the conceit that's associated with that, there's this quality of equanimity that Ratnasambhava seems to embody. So this jewel that Ratnasambhava holds has been described as the wish-fulfilling jewel, but it's also been described as the Bodhicitta jewel, particularly as the Ratnasambhava tradition developed. It became identified with the Bodhicitta, which is often symbolised as a jewel, the most precious thing spiritually, just as jewels are precious in the worldly sense. So the Bodhicitta is the urge of a determination to gain awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings, this inspiring idea of the Bodhisattva ideal. It may seem a huge leap from the neurotic preoccupations of the worldly winds and the associated conceit to Ratnasambhava and the Bodhicitta. It's worth remembering, though, that according to Buddhism, when we visualise or meditate on a Buddha figure, whether Ratnasambhava or any other Buddha, we're actually visualising ourselves as we could be when we've completed our own spiritual path. Ratnasambhava's connection with the earth element and with jewels remind us that jewels are mined from the earth. And we have to mine our own jewels from the earth of our own experience. So I've been wondering how we might do this in relation to the wisdom of Ratnasambhava. So reflecting on the eight worldly winds, Perhaps we could be aware of when we notice we're getting caught up in the worldly winds. Maybe when we're defining ourselves in terms of having received or wanting or needing praise or censure, for example. And maybe we could notice which of those worldly winds we might be particularly affected by. And related to this, another practice could be to maybe notice what activates this sense of conceit for us. What situations or events or maybe fantasies trigger off a sense of ourselves as being superior or inferior or the same as others. So how does that happen? And if we do find ourselves triggered in that way, then what effect does that have on our sense of relationship to the world or to other people? So, for example, personally, I've noticed my sense of empathy seems to reduce a lot if I start to think of myself as being superior or inferior. So another practice suggestion might be in relation to our metta practice, as I'm making some suggestions about this at the start tonight, and perhaps exploring how we might incorporate the wisdom of sameness in our metta practice. So maybe we could do this by using our embodied mindfulness practice as a starting point for expanding our sense of empathy. So as we sit down to meditate, and maybe we take time to connect with our experience of the body, we maybe notice some quite fundamental experiences. The feeling of the breath coming into and leaving our body. Maybe noticing what feelings of discomfort we feel now and what feelings of pleasure. Maybe noticing the sounds that we hear or thoughts that are going through our mind. Maybe noticing the feelings that come and go. So I guess the content of this varies from person to person. We all have our own particular narratives and patterns. But the fundamental building blocks, we actually share that. And also the sense of the transience of all these experiences. They're all they're all very impermanent. So we can maybe use that as a cue to remind ourselves or other people in the different stages of the metta. That's a common experience. So I often find with the neutral person, I might not actually know anything very much about the neutral person at all, about what their life is like, but these kind of experiences, pleasure, pain, whatever, that's all shared. And I suppose in the fifth stage where we open up the practice, there is that potential to move towards the sense of sameness or solidarity or common humanity. There's a female Buddha associated with Ratnasambhava called Mamaki, and again got a lovely image of her by Vishuddhimati on the shrine. So that's Mamaki over here on the left of the shrine. And again she's a yellow figure, made of yellow light, and I think she's traditionally represented in the posture of royal ease, with one leg kind of hanging down. That sort of conveys that sense of relaxation and gracefulness, and maybe a sense of freedom from some of the stress that perhaps we have with this sense of the worldly winds and conceit, with some sense of freedom and ease and poise that she expresses. So Mamaki's name means mind maker. So she's the embodiment of the wisdom of sameness. So the tradition is that the male figure often is a sort of the compassion side, and the female figure is the wisdom side and the sort of traditional imagery. So she's now embodying the wisdom of sameness. And I think her name, Mind Maker, refers to this process of coming to identify with all beings. So this sense of solidarity of all, with all life. And I think there's a verse in the Metta Sutta that talks about Metta being, or universal Metta being a bit like the love a mother has for her child, but actually having that towards all beings. So I think that's the sort of the ultimate, point of this kind of wisdom and compassion. So the this wisdom of sameness is that sense of metta and compassion, but it's fused with a particular kind of insight into how all beings share these qualities of being impermanent and insubstantial. Again, the Buddha's path started with the four sights, old age, sickness, death, but also the potential to practice, potential to gain awakening. Again, that's all shared experience. So I just wanted to complete this talk by reading a very short verse which seems to capture this sense of all phenomena sharing this these qualities. And it's from the Diamond Sutra, so it's quite a well-known verse. As stars, a fault of vision, as a lamp, a mock show, dewdrops, or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash, or cloud. View all conditioned things like this.